Okay, gentlemen, so welcome back to Zman. I'm probably more excited to see you than you are excited to see me. Just for full disclosure of everything or whatever, today's the first day I'm out of my apartment for about 3 weeks. I had one kid with COVID, followed by another kid with COVID. And all the relevant quarantines that came up from that. So I am really happy to not be in my living room right now. And I'm really happy to see other human beings. It's kind of, this time is just, Baruch Hashem, everyone is fine. Like everyone is really healthy, everyone is fine. It's just there's a certain craziness of knowing that you're in quarantine. Okay, so we are beginning now from the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Ches Amid Beis.
Excuse me, could I just mention that you're against a very white background and it's hard to see you? I welcome the opportunity to see your mouth.
Is this better?
Yeah, this is better.
Okay. I'm currently in my office in YU. The building's in why you are largely closed. The base midrash is closed, but they allow us to get into our office. I should add, by the way, that we're going to have to finish today at around 2:15, 2:20 for the next few days because Mincha's at 2:30, but it's not in this building. So, okay. So let's just review what we are up to. We spent the beginning of this Zman, the beginning of the semester, talking about the Dinim D'Rabbanan and the Bishul. In a weird sort of way, we learned Hatmana first. First, we spoke about the halachos of insulating on Shabbos. Then we moved on to the halachos of Hachazara and then Shehiyah. Right? So we spoke about all of the Isurim D'Rabbanan that are involved with cooking on Shabbos. And the crazy thing about our perek is we deal with Isurim D'Rabbanan before we deal with Isurim D'Oraisa. So we are beginning now, today, on October 13th of 2020, we're beginning to discuss the Isurim D'Oraisa of cooking. What does it mean to cook? Now, when I talk about cooking, and we're going to flesh this out over time, there are a few different issues that we have to focus on. One is the source of the heat. The other issue is the item that is being cooked. And a related issue is to what extent is that item being cooked, right? So in terms of the source of the heat, we'll talk about heating an item directly in the sun. We'll talk about heating an item in a kli rishon in the first vessel that was on the fire, heating an item in a kli sheni when you pour from that first vessel to second vessel. We'll talk about the item that gets cooked. Technically speaking, there are differences between liquids and solids, which are both food items, and then there's also technically cooking on non-food items. We'll have to address all of those issues. And we will talk about the extent to which an item is cooked. Is the item cooked so that it is, at least in the context of food, fully edible, or is the item cooked and it's not yet fully edible, but it's partially edible, partially usable, etc.? Now, much of the discussion does not happen directly, but we get to it kind of in a roundabout way. And the first Mishnah that we're learning today, the Mishnah on Lamed Ches Amud Beis, teaches, Ein nosnim beitza b'tzad hamecha b'shvil shetiskal gael, that you're not allowed to put an egg next to a mecham, is like a urn. The mecham is on the fire. I'm putting the egg next to the pot, which is on the fire, and I'm doing that b'shvil shetiskal gael. How would you translate the words "b'shvil shatis galgal"? So it would seem that it means that the egg gets rounder, right? That's what it would seem to mean. Rashi, however, does not say that. If you look at Rashi, Rashi comments, "b'shvil shatis galgal" means "shatitz lekitzas." Ad shetehei migolgelas, or migalgelas, something like that. That you are cooking the egg partially. Until the egg is migolageles, not abundantly clear what it means. By the way, isn't do eggs get rounder when they cook? I don't think so.
Can I give an explanation of how I understood it?
Yes, when
I
was please. With Avery?
There's a point where you can spin an egg. And so if you go to your fridge and you find an egg and you know if it's soft-boiled or hard-boiled, you spin it. And if it spins on its top, then it is hard-boiled. If it spins in a lopsided way, then it's soft because the yolk is moving around. So the way I interpreted this, I don't know.
That could be interesting.
It's so a spinnable egg.
That
but I don't think an egg changes.
Means that the egg would become hard-boiled to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that is a possibility, certainly. I'm not sure if that's what Rashi means, because Rashi says shetitz leketzas, right? Shetitz leketzas, if anything, might mean that the egg is somewhat soft-boiled or partially cooked,
mm-hmm.
right? And the Baratanura, in his comment on the Mishnah, understands that you're cooking the egg to the extent that you are mixing the yolk with the egg white. Now, I'm not really sure what that means, because when the egg is fully hard-boiled, the yolk does not mix at all with the egg white. Mm-hmm. Apparently, you're cooking this to some limited extent, according to Rashi. It's certainly, for Rashi, I would agree with Ari, if it would be up to me. I would say that it means that you're making the egg hard-boiled, but Rashi does not seem to say that. Now, the Mishnah continues, right? V'lo yafkiena besudarin. V'lo yafkiena besudarin, the way Rashi understands, means that you're not allowed to crack an egg on top of a kerchief, a handkerchief that was heated in the sun. So Rashi is taking the word yafkiena to be the same as the term yavkiena. To be bokea is to split it open. Rashi is saying yafkiena means to be bokea the egg, to split the egg. You're splitting the egg on a kerchief. The kerchief is heated in the sun. Effectively, it's like what you all try to do as kids, which is fry an egg on the sidewalk, right? That's the basic issue. That's the way Rashi understands it. If you look, however, in the Rambam, in the Frankel Rambam, in the back of the Frankel Rambam, they have what they call a Perush Kadmon Mimitzrayim, some early commentary from Egypt. I have no idea who it is. I don't think anyone knows who it is. He understands the word yafkiena in two other ways. Yafkiena could mean that it comes from an expression that they have in Shas called pakia haomer, which is when you take a string and you twine it together. You wrap it. So yafkiena in this context might mean that you are wrapping the egg with a sudar. You're wrapping it with like a kerchief. If that's the case, so it would be more similar to the discussions of hatmana, of insulating, rather than any other possibility. The third possibility, which is also found in this Perush Kadmon Mimitzrayim, the third possibility, by the way, it's found on the Rambam Perek Tes Halacha Beis, on that Rambam, which I asked you to take a look at. The third possibility is that what you're doing is you are covering the egg with the hot handkerchief. That's basically the explanations of lo yafki and the besudarin. So according to the Tana Kama, you're not allowed to do this. According to Rabbi Yossi, you are allowed to do this. The Gemara will explain that the dispute between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi relates to the status of cooking something through a heat source that was heated by the sun. Classical standard cooking, as we'll see, is heating something on the fire. Heating something in the sun is not a normal way of cooking. Heating something with something that was heated by the sun might appear like a normal way of cooking. Because if I have, let's say, a pot, and that pot was heated by a fire, so to cook something in that empty pot, right, that looks like you're cooking on a fire. If I take the same empty pot and I heat the empty pot theoretically in the sun, no one will be able to distinguish between that pot and the pot that was heated on a fire. So the dispute between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim relates to what's called todos schama, something that is a derivative of heat from the sun. Then the Mishnah continues with halachos that seem to be hatmana halachos.
It appears that the chimum is not the egg, but the sudar. Sudar was heated before by the sun, and then the egg is wrapped up in that sudar, and the egg gets cooked or gets warmed up, overwarmed, by a sudar that was heated in the sun.
Exactly. In other words, just to put this in different terms, there are two separate issues that the Mishnah is addressing. One is the heat source of the cooking, right? And the second issue is the object that is being cooked, the egg. Right? There are two issues that come up. The first line in the Mishnah is talking about cooking an egg with a relatively standard heat source, right? That's putting that beitza next to a mecham. The second issue is talking about an unusual heat source. And then the third issue in the Mishnah is lo yatzminena b'chol u'bavak drachim b'sho shetitzle, meaning that you should not put the egg in sand. Sand also gets hot from the sun. Avak drachim is dirt on the road. In the Tiferes Yisrael and Mishnayis, he explains that heating an egg in dirt from the road is that the dirt gets hot because the wagons go on the dirt and the wagon wheels heat up the dirt. Again, I don't know about you. I generally don't. Are you driving the car, not on the wagon? But the assumption is that the dirt gets hot because of the wagon wheels. That is the avak drachim. So again, the issue is also an issue of heat source, but now we're combining the issue of heat source together with the issue of hatmana, of covering the egg. And then the continuation of the Mishnah. Ma'isa sh'asu anshei Tiberia. Ve'viyu silon shel tzonin l'toch ama shochamin. They take a pipe of cold water and they put it into a ditch that has hot water. Omer lahem chachamim, if it's on Shabbos, it has a status of hot water heated on Shabbos and you're not allowed to bathe in it or drink it. If it happened on Yom Tov, it has the status of water that was heated on Yom Tov, and you are not allowed to bathe in it, but you are allowed to drink it. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook water to drink. If they took this pipe and they put it through the hot water on Yom Tov, so you are allowed to drink that water, but you're not supposed to bathe in that water. Now, the last line in the Mishnah is basically about hatmana, right? That's what it seems to be also, that you are taking a pot and you are putting it into the hot, a pipe and it's going through the hot water. It would seem that that's some sort of hatmana, but it could also be it's some sort of bishul. It could also be that the issue at hand is that you are cooking the water again in an unusual heat source. The people in Tiberia are probably using the famous springs of Tiberia to cook the water. So I read this Mishnah, and I really don't have any idea what the Mishnah is ultimately talking about, because the Mishnah is talking about a whole bunch of different things. It's talking about cooking eggs, it's talking about different heat sources, and the Mishnah also is throwing in something about hatmana, The word Hatmana appears in the Mishnah. And then the last line in the Mishnah might be talking about Hatmana, might be talking about Bishul. I didn't assign this Tosis, but if you look in the Tosis Maisa Vehivi'u Silon, that Tosis basically has two different opinions as to whether that line in the Mishnah is focused on the halacha of Hatmana or is it focused on the halacha of Bishul. Now, one of the great things, by the way, about not wearing a mask when you say shir is that I can actually take a sip of something in the middle, which I feel helps me speak more. Okay, so the Gemara has a question. Ibayalahu, Gilgal Mai. Right? The Mishnah says don't put an egg there so that the egg gets rounder or the egg could spin. Or the egg gets all mixed up, whatever it meant. Well, let's say you do that. What's the halacha? So if Yosef tells me Gilgal is chayiv chatos, Rabbi Yosef says that this is an iser d'oraisa. You bring a carbon if you do this thing called Gilgal on the egg. That's what Rabbi Yosef says. The Gemara says, Amamar breda ravina, afanan nami tnina. They bring a proof to Rav Yosef's halacha from a Mishnah that appears later on in Kuf Mem Hayamid Beis. The Mishnah says, "V'akol sheba b'cham in lufnei Shabbos, shorin also b'cham b'Shabbos." This Mishnah is the source of the halacha of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. If something is ba b'cham in lufnei HaShabbos, something came in hot water before Shabbos, and we'll have to discuss what that means, but if it came into hot water on Shabbos, so you're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos, which is the basic rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Once something is cooked once, there is no subsequent cooking on it again. Right? The way Rashi explains it over here, that Ein Bo Mishum Tikun Shari Nitkan Kvar. Rashi says you're not improving anything, because all the improvement already happened. The food item already improved through stage one. However, the Mishnah there on Kuf Memhe, that's quoted on Lamed Tes, says, Kosha loba b'chama b'chamim lufnei HaShabbos. If the food item did not come in contact with hot water before Shabbos, it wasn't cooked. So then, mandichin also b'chamin b'Shabbos. You're allowed to rinse it off on Shabbos, which means you're allowed to pour water on it, but you cannot put it into the water. But there is an exception. Chutzmi maliach yashin v'koyos ha'ispinin. The exceptions are some old salty meat or old salty fish, maybe, and koyos ha'ispinin is tuna. It's a fish, apparently, right, that cooks very easily. So in these cases, you're not even allowed to pour water on it. Shadochasan zuhi gemar melachton. That rinsing it off is something that completes the cooking process. So let's just review what we have. We have a halacha that food which is already cooked before Shabbos, you're allowed to recook it. We have halacha that food that was not cooked before Shabbos, you're allowed to pour water on it, but you can't actually cook it. But there's an exception that you have certain foods which cook relatively easily, like tuna, right? The fish that they call tunina, that's what Rashi says. So in these cases, you're not allowed to pour hot water on it because it is considered gemar melacha, which Rashi comments means that this is the bishul on the fish. Okay, gentlemen, can anyone explain this to me? We have a question. What's the status of the egg? So we say, if you cook the egg, you chayiv chatos. And then we prove it from what? We prove it from tuna. We prove it from that you're not supposed to cook something that's not cooked. But you're allowed to pour water on it, because pouring water is not considered actually cooking, but you're not allowed to pour water on tuna. So how do you see anything about fish over here? How do you see anything about eggs over here? Right? This Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei that the Gemara invokes, how does that prove anything about eggs?
Wouldn't it come from the fact that we're saying that tuna is something that requires very light cooking, and therefore netgagel is a very light cooking of the egg? Wouldn't that be
okay? So what Jake is suggesting is that if Rashi is correct, that the egg that I'm talking about is something that's nispashel ketsas, is a teeny bit of cooking that is involved when you make the egg rounder or whatever you're doing. So the question in the Gemara is, what's the status of this small amount of cooking? Are you chayiv or are you not chayiv? Right? And then we prove from the tuna that something that requires a little bit of cooking is also a problem, but it doesn't exactly work. Because all the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei says is that you're not allowed to pour hot water on top of a tuna. It does not say that if you pour hot water on the tuna, you are chayiv. It does not say that it's a Torah prohibition. No? The word chayiv does not appear in the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei. Rashi, the Rashi that begins on the last wide line of the top of Lamed Tesamer Aleph, Rashi that begins, Shahado Chasu Zehu Gemar Malachto, Rashi says, Shema Mizeho Bishulo V'chayiv. Rashi adds the word chayiv, but the word chayiv does not appear in the Mishnah.
Rabbi?
Yes, Nady, how are you?
Baruch Hashem. Do you always need chayiv, or is usher just good enough? Meaning, we say pater, pater aval usher, but does usher mean usher aval lo chayiv?
So, pater means it's a din d'rabbanon. I'm assuming that what we're trying to do is prove Rav Yosef's statement, which is that you're chayiv achatos, right? Rav Yosef is saying that's a din d'oraisa. So how am I proving anything that it's a din d'oraisa from the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei? All the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Hei says, again, if the question in the Gemara relates to the object, right, the chefza that's being cooked, the egg. And the question is, the egg is partially cooked, like Jake explained. And we're comparing the partially cooked egg to the tuna. So then I have no proof from the Mishnah that I'm chayiv. This issue is pointed out by the Chazon Ish. If you look in the Chazon Ish and Simin Nun Beis Os Yud Tes, I think I assigned the Chazon Ish, but my guess is it's not so easy to find. Is the Chazon Ish on Bar Ilan? Is it accessible electronically? I don't know. I don't know if the Chazon Ish is. I'm spoiled. I actually have like Svarim at home. But the issue is, says the Chazon Ish, that you cannot understand that the Gemara is proving anything about the object that is being cooked in the sense of an object that is partially cooked, because if that's the case, so then the Mishnah should have had the term chayiv, or the Gemara should have used the word chayiv. Without that word chayiv, you have no proof to Rav Yosef's statement if it relates to the object. Now, just to take a step back, the question that the question of the Gemara, when the Gemara says Ibayelahu Gilgal Mai, the question of the Gemara could be understood that we're asking whether you are chayiv for partial cooking or you're not chayiv for partial cooking. And this is the way the Ran understands it. Now, when I say the Ran on the sources, I pointed out that there are two different Rans. There is the Mossad HaRav Kook edition of the Ran, which is the actual Ran. Then there's someone else who is assumed to be the Ran, but isn't really the Ran. The Ran in the Mossad HaRav Kook Ran, the Ran is basically saying that the issue relates to the egg that is partially cooked. And the proof then would be from Tuna. But the Chazon Ish raises his objection that the word chayiv is not found. A second objection to this approach is the following. If we're saying that the issue at hand is partial cooking, which is the way that Ran said it. So in halacha, I have a term for partial cooking. That term is called maichu ben shusai. That term is called food that is cooked to the extent that it is somewhat edible, but it's edible for a fleeing fugitive. If I break into your house and I'm just hungry after I broke and entered, so I'm going to take a quick bite of the food. It's not fully cooked, but I got to get out of there. So even though the food is partially cooked, right, it's a third of the way cooked or halfway cooked, Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. So that is the expression in halacha that's most often used. Maicho ben Jusoy is the expression most often used for partially cooked food. Gilgal, this expression that you're rounding the egg or whatever you're doing, if the issue at hand is partially cooked, so the Chassam Sofer in his comments on the Gemara raises, one second, if we're talking about partially cooked, use the normal term, Maicho ben Shusai. You cook it to the extent that it's somewhat edible. My understanding is that if I'm right, and we're talking about a soft-boiled egg, not the way Ari said it, that it's a hard-boiled egg. If it's a soft-boiled egg, so a soft-boiled egg is pretty similar to what I call Macho Ben Shusai. It's somewhat edible, but it's not, again, those of you who like soft-boiled eggs for breakfast will have to forgive me for this. It's somewhat edible, but it's not completely edible. It's somewhat like Macho Ben Shusai. So how come we don't use the normal term of Macho Ben Shusai? Now, Jake, I think you have something to say.
Would it be? It seems difficult to say that we're talking about not complete cooking when the Gemara describes the tunina itself, its hadacha, as being Gemara Melachton. It seems that Macho Ben Shusai is completely off the table because we're talking things which are only cooked a minimal amount.
Gemar Malacha sounds like it's completely done, unless you're going to say that Gemar Malachto, even though the words sound like it's completely done, but in context, what we're saying is a little bit of cooking works on these things. It doesn't become fully cooked. A tuna becomes edible when you just pour water on it. Gemar Malachto in the sense of, if I want to eat it in this state, that's good enough. But yes, you're right.
The Pasha is that we're not talking about Maicho ben Shusai, because it would have said so, and it wouldn't have indicated that this is Gemar Malachto. It seems that these are just foods with a much lower threshold because they're edible well before Maicho ben Shusai.
Okay.
Especially if this is a Dacha from a Klisheni.
Again, we'll have to flesh that issue out in the Tosis, whether we're talking the Machlokas Rashbam, there's two versions of the Tosis versus the Rabbeinu Tam. But ultimately, what I do see is I have this food item that cooks with less cooking pressure, so to speak, than most food items. Eggs cook with less cooking pressure, right? And this type of fish cooks easier than other things. That seems to be the issue, but you're right. The term Gemar Melacha seems to be another proof against this explanation that the Ran has. Now, let me just add a dimension to the conversation about cooking eggs. If our focus is on the object that I cook, so most often, if I cook something, the item goes from inedible to edible. Raw meat is not edible. I cook the meat, it becomes edible. There are certain items that were edible, however, before you cook them, and the cooking changes the way you eat it rather than transforming the item from inedible to edible. Meaning, raw meat is not edible. Cooked meat is edible. A raw egg is somewhat edible. The great Chazanim used to drink raw eggs to lubricate the throat, no? A raw egg is, it might not taste good, but it is somewhat edible. If that's the case, so one could understand that the issue in our Gemara is taking food from a edible, albeit with difficulty, stage and making the food tastier. If that's the case, so the tuna, raw fish, people would not have thought of this until a couple of years ago when sushi became popular, but effectively, raw fish, and tuna, by the way, is one of those items, right? There are three types of, there's sushi-grade tuna. It's a, right? You can eat tuna raw. But there is some change in the tuna when you do some amount of partial cooking to it. And maybe that's the comparison to the egg. Perhaps. My proof to this comes from the halachos of Bishul Akum. This past summer, I taught Bishul Akum in Zoom Yeshiva YU. And one of the issues with Bishul Akum is that the halacha is that food cooked by a non-Jew is forbidden. But if the food was edible when it's raw, and then the non-Jew cooks it, so the food is permitted. The reason why food is forbidden if it's cooked by a non-Jew is because the non-Jew is going out of his way to do a favor for you, to cook food, and that might create some feeling of love between you and the fellow who cooked the food, and you might end up marrying his daughter. It's going to lead to intermarriage. If, however, the food was edible raw, so the guy who cooks the food isn't doing you such a favor. So that's why there's no din of Bishul Akum on the Dover, that's Nechal Kamo Shulchai. We'll have to speak about this in the context of Bishul on Shabbos also. Pardon me. But there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. What about something that's Nechal Kamo Shulchai al Yidei HaDechak? Something that's edible when it's Ruah, but it's edible with difficulty. And the example that's given there is eggs. If you look in Simin Kuf Yud Gimel, Seif Yud Gimel, in the Bach that's quoted there by the Shach, they say that eggs are edible ruah with difficulty. So that got me to thinking that maybe the issue with eggs is that it's partial cooking, not in the sense that the item is not fully cooked, but it's partial cooking in the sense that it's not necessary to cook the item to make the item edible. Meaning to say, and I don't know if Ari will like this or not, but perhaps what Rashi means with the term bishul ketzas, right, is not that it is soft-boiled. Maybe it's a hard-boiled egg, but it's partial cooking in the sense of the item was edible beforehand. Complete cooking means I take inedible food and I make it edible. This is partial cooking. Again, I'm reading this Rashi not in the literal way, but this is partial cooking in the sense that I am taking food that was edible with difficulty and I'm making it edible with less difficulty. I'm making it more edible. That might be the issue. And if that's the case, so the comparison to the tuna is also apt, or and the Gemara Melacha might be solved. Jake's issue, right? How can you compare egg to fish, right? The fish is Gemara Melacha, it's all the way done, right? And the egg we're saying is partially done. I would argue that Ari is right. The egg is a hard-boiled egg. It actually spins. The comparison of Gemara Melacha means that you are taking something that was edible with difficulty and you are making it fully edible. And that's the comparison to Gemara Melacha. So, explanation one.
If you would break the egg open in the desert on a rock,
yeah,
and put it next to a piece of tuna, so both the egg and the piece of tuna will have a full bishul on a rock in the desert or in the Negev in Israel because of the sun, and it's the summer. So it's you don't have to say partial bishul. It's total bishul. So it's bishul mamash.
So again, I would agree that it's, you can cook an egg in the sun. I've never tried to cook tuna in the sun. I did try to cook eggs in the sun as a kid. I'm just saying that it's called partial bishul in the sense of it's unusual bishul. Complete bishul means it goes from inedible to edible. This is partial bishul in this new sense. It's partially being cooked in that it was edible previously. That's all I'm trying to say. So basically what we have is explanation one in our Gemara, that the issue that the Gemara is questioning when it says Gilgal Mai, the issue at hand relates to the food that is being cooked. That's the way the Ran understands it. The Chazon Ish says that this does not really... The Chazon Ish basically deals with this question in terms of the comparison to the tuna, etc. Now, the Ritva, however, has a different take on the Gemara. The Ritva's take on the Gemara is that the Gemara's question of Gilgal Mai relates to the heat source that I'm using. What I'm doing over here is I am cooking something in a relatively unusual way. My heat source is unusual. Usually when I cook something on top of the fire. Over here, what I'm doing is I am cooking something next to the fire. I have a pot. The pot's on the fire. I put my egg next to the pot. The question is that a way of cooking that is going to be chayiv min haTorah or not? Ibayelhu, Gilgal Mai. Let's say I did this trick. I put the egg next to the pot. Is that a normal way of cooking? That's the question of the Gemara. This is a relatively unusual heat source. Then the Gemara proves that you're chayev chatos. And we say, you know what? I noticed from the tuna case that when you pour hot water on the tuna, that's also not a normal way of cooking. A normal way of cooking is that you take food, you put it in the pot. The pot is on the fire. Both in the case of pouring the water on the tuna. And in the case of putting the egg next to the pot, it's an unusual way of cooking. So therefore, the Gemara's question, according to approach number two, relates not to the object that's being cooked, but it relates to the method or the heat source of cooking. We want to know, are you chayiv or are you not chayiv because of the unusual heat source? That's the question. Now, according to the Ran, according to the Ran that the Mosad HaRav Kook quoted, so the question of the Gemara of Gilgal Mai relates to if you cook something in a relatively unusual way, meaning the method of cooking is not that you're putting the food in the pot, but rather you're cooking it next to the pot. So the way the Ran phrases the question is whether toldos ha'ar is a av malacha or is it a tolda? Let's take a step back. Cooking something on a fire directly is the normal way of cooking. That's the av malacha. That's the way they probably cooked in the Mishkan. The halacha on Shabbos is that not only do I have 39 ovos malachos, not only are there 39 discrete categories of malacha that are forbidden, but there are also toldos. There are also things which are similar enough to the av malacha that they are chayiv min haTorah, although that was not exactly the same thing that was done in the Mishkan. Now, that's called a tolda. It's chayiv, but it was not exactly the same thing that was done in the Mishkan. The question of the Ran, again, the two different Rans, it said I'm using the word Ran. The word Ran can mean anything you want in this context. But the way the Ran says the question, the Gemara is asking about this heat source. And we want to know, is it an av? We want to know, excuse me, blah, 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 blah. I said it backwards. The Ran wants to know whether it is asur min ha-Torah or is it asur min rabbanon. That's the way the Ran says it. If you're Gilgal, if you take an egg and you cook the egg next to the urn, and the urn is on the fire, Gilgal Mai, what's the status of that cooking? What's the status of that cooking? Is it asur min ha-Torah or is it asur min derabbanan? The answer is, says Rav Yosef, it's asur min ha-Torah, yechayev chatos. Says the Egleital, the Rebbe of Sachachov, Rebbe Avram Borenstein, his name was. The Egleital writes, it's found in Se'if Katan Chaf Beis in the Egleital. The Egleital says that the fact that the Ran has a question, is it De'orais or is it De'rabbanon? And the answer of the Gemara is that it's De'oraisa, means it is not an Av Malacha. Within Malachos of Shabbos, I began saying this backwards 2 minutes ago. Now I'm saying it the correct way. Within Malachos of Shabbos, there's the primary category of Malacha, the things which were exactly done in the Mishkan, and then there are those actions which are derived from the primary category, the toldos. If I have a question, is this chayiv, is it d'orais or is it d'rabbanon? And the answer of the Gemara is that it is d'oraisa. That would indicate that it is not an av malacha. Were it to be an av malacha, so then it's too far removed from the possibility of d'rabbanon. If you have a question, is it X or Y? So X and Y are relatively close to each other. You're not going to ask, is it d'oraisa? Right? You're not going to ask, excuse me, is it an av malacha or is it d'rabbanon? Av malacha and d'rabbanon are so far removed, you won't have that question. If you have a question, is it d'orais or is it d'rabbanon? So presumably the question is whether it's a tolda or is it derabanan. And if that's the case, the answer of the Gemara that Gilgal chayiv chatos is that cooking the egg with this heat source, the issue relates to the heat source, this type of heat source of toldos ha'ar is a tolda. It is a derivative of the actual malacha rather than being an av malacha. That's what the Avni Nezer suggests as the pshat in the Ran. However, the Avni Nezer goes on to say the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam in Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos Halacha Beis, the Rambam quotes our Gemara, and the Rambam says that if I do this thing called Gilgal, I'm chayiv, grand. But the Rambam has to be talking about the Av Malacha of Bishul, because Rambam is very organized. And the Rambam, beginning in Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam tells us the rules of Bishul on Shabbos. If you read Perek Tes Halacha Aleph, the Rambam says that there's cooking on food items and on non-food items. The Rambam then speaks about Gilgal as Chayiv Chatas Ar Gemara. The Rambam goes on all the dinim of the Av Malacha of cooking. And then in Halacha Vav, the Rambam speaks about the toldos of cooking. The Rambam speaks about the derivatives of cooking. The fact that this Halacha of Gilgal appears in the Rambam in Perek Tes Halacha Beis before Halacha Vav would indicate that the Rambam is saying that Gilgal is an Av Malacha. That's what the Eglital notes. If that's the case, that the Rambam is saying that's an Av Malacha, so the Rambam cannot learn the question of the Gemara about is it D'Oraisa or is it D'Rabbanan? Because if it's D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan, we're asking, is it a Tolda or a D'Rabbanan? The Rambam goes all the way and says it's an Av. So obviously for the Rambam, the issue at hand is not about the heat source, but it's about the item that's being cooked. It's about the egg itself. Okay, let's just review what we said, because I think it's a little more complicated than I thought it was. And God willing, tomorrow we'll develop this a tiny bit further. Did anyone have a chance to look at the Rosh Hashanah yet? Thumbs? Okay, so take a look at that Rosh Hashanah for tomorrow. If you can get your hands on the Chazon Ish, it will be helpful. But effectively, what I'm trying to suggest is that there are two ways of reading this Gemara. Gilgal Mai. The Gemara asks, what happens if you do this to the egg? One possibility is that the Gemara is asking a question relating to the heat source. And that's the way the Mosar HaRav Kook Ran understands it. The question is it D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan? Because you're not cooking it directly on the fire, but you're cooking it next to the fire. It's somewhat unusual. The answer the Gemara has is that although the heat source is somewhat unusual, you're still Chayiv Chatos. That is one approach. But according to that approach, you would get the impression that this unusual heat source can only be a tolda. The Rambam, however, says that when you use the unusual heat source, you're cooking something next to the fire, it's an av malacha. If that's the case, so then for the Rambam, you have to understand that the Gemara's question of Gilgal Mai, the question relates to the object that's being cooked. Cooking an egg, what's the status of that? Is it chayiv or not? Now, we had two ways of understanding the question with respect to cooking an egg. One way of saying it is that the egg is cooked partially, and we want to know what's the status of partial cooking. We weren't crazy about that approach, because partial cooking is usually called macho ben shusayin halacha. Therefore, we came up with another interpretation of why the egg is considered partially cooked, which is that the egg is partially cooked in the sense of you are taking something that was previously edible and you are making it more edible. And that would fit in better with the approach that Gilgal means what you think it means, that you can now spin the egg, that the egg is now hard boiled. So basically, we have two approaches to learning this Gemara. The question relates either to the object, and we're proving eggs from tuna, or the question relates to the method of cooking, and we're proving cooking something next to the fire from cooking something by pouring water on top of it, which, when you think about it, by the way, is very similar to cooking something next to the fire. When I pour water, I have a fire over here, I pick up the pot, then I pour it. It's next to the fire, right? It's a very similar type of idea. So these are the points I wanted to make. I have to break now to try to make the 2:30 mincha, but God willing, we will continue tomorrow. Has anyone seen that bir halacha in Shin Yud Ches Se'if Dalad? Okay, so for tomorrow, I want to talk about the Rashash and the bir halacha, and we will go on from here. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for coming to listen. Have a good day.
Thank you.